Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Gillian Thomas as my special expert guest. Gilly Thomas is a seasoned teacher, world traveler, mother, writer, river rafting guide, and athlete. She specializes in working with people who have experienced physical, emotional, or developmental trauma. Gilly has a background in education, psychology, and nursing, and is a certified Rubenfeld Synergist, a modality that works with the dynamic interrelation of the body, mind, emotions, and spirit. Gilly develops presentations which incorporate experiential as well as intellectual aspects so that people get it from the inside out and understand why. Gilly has worked in the field of body-mind therapy for over 10 years. She has a private practice as a synergist. In addition to facilitating self-awareness workshops in both Canada and the United States. Good morning, Gilly. Welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update.
Good morning, Corey.
It's wonderful to have you on our show, and we always look forward to meeting new guests. And we know someone in common, Lisa Hawley, my sister-in-law, and she told us you've got to get Gilly on the show, so here we are. So tell us, first of all, how did you develop such a strong interest in natural health?
From my roots, my father was a phys ed teacher and my mother was a dietitian, and they both were very strong advocates of natural health and natural healing. So I grew up with that.
That's kind of uncommon because in my experience, PE teachers that are conventionally trained don't usually have a connection to integrative functional medicine or natural health. Neither do dietitians. They sometimes come out of university with this kind of university consciousness, and they kind of miss the boat when it comes into the integrative functional medicine. Do you sort of get what I'm saying there?
I totally do. And I think my parents are unique because they have different backgrounds. My mom was born in Burma and ended up in Scotland during the end of World War II. And then my mom and dad both immigrated to Canada and ended up in Northern Canada for a number of years with us kids. So they're a bit adventuresome and open-minded people, I would say.
That's remarkable. Now, Burma, that is a country that few people even know exists, let alone have been there. I haven't been there myself, but almost did. I was close. I got up into northern Thailand and traveled through India. But have you actually been to Burma yourself?
I have. I went there about 6 years ago and searching out a little bit more about my roots and loved it. It was an incredible country. I've traveled a lot, and I'd say Burma's my favorite place. It's hard traveling. It's not easy with a lot of luxuries, but the people are very, very genuine and warm-hearted, and it's a lovely place to go to.
Well, it sounds like my kind of place, especially when you're talking about no luxury, because I'm not into the five-star hotel experience when I travel.
Mm-hmm.
I love to get in with the people and work with the people and eat with the people. That's how, of course, I'm sure you've experienced that. That's how you really get to know them. Isn't that true?
That's absolutely true.
And then the Scottish background, have you been to Scotland as well?
I have been to Scotland.
So tell us about Scotland.
Well, Scotland is, my daughter says it's like a mini Canada. Everything is in miniature. There's the waterfalls are smaller, the mountains are smaller, the people are shorter, the doorways are shorter. And they've got a wonderful sense of humor and a lovely lilt, and I love the music, Scottish music. It's great biking, and it's I've been so blessed. I've only been there in great weather. So it's a misconception that it only rains in Scotland, because it doesn't. It can be nice there too.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. Well, I have yet to go there. That's, I would say, the larger percentage of my ethnic origin. I got a touch of Norwegian and some English, but mostly Scotch. So there's our connection there. Now, you specialize in working with people who have experienced physical, emotional, and, you know, trauma on, I guess, all kinds of different levels. Why this particular area of therapy? What attracts you to that? What is it about that that brings you to that?
Well, you know, thinking about that, and it's a bit of the old adage, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? And I've been practicing Synergy for 10 years now. And people have come to me with a variety of different things, like they can't sleep, they're in a lot of pain, they're depressed, They have no energy. Their back feels like it's in a vice grip. They have headaches. And then I work with them for, you know, one session to 10 sessions, or sometimes people just love it. They just keep coming to see me, which I love because it's the work really expands people into themselves. And then about 2 years ago, I did a lot of research into brain, the whole neuroplasticity of the brain and the communication between the mind and the body. And I thought, well, you know, this explains exactly why the work I do works for people, why it is really healing, because you can't separate the mind from the body or the body from the mind and work with them. Well, you can, and you can get a certain level of results, but sometimes people get really, really stuck. And so my understanding of what I do now is no matter what I do, I'm working with, on some level, with some kind of trauma that somebody's been through. And it could be something that they could say, yeah, I was in a car accident, and that's why this has happened. Or it could be something where they come in and they say, I don't really know. You know, I just know that I'm not feeling good. And then when we start chatting, there could have been something back in their childhood that happened that just stopped them, got a little frozen in their body. And once it unfreezes, they can just move a lot more freely in their life.
That's a fascinating area. Now tell us a little bit about what you know about emotions themselves, where they come from, how they're formed, whether we have control over them or not.
Well, that's a really interesting question. Where do emotions come from? I believe they're stored in memory in your body, in different cells in your body. And Candace Pert actually wrote an incredible book called Molecules of Emotion. And what happens is as we're growing up, there's different things that we're around our families or friends or school, and we see and perceive different responses to different situations. But each of us are born with 6 basic emotions, and all of the emotions, because there's many, 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 are combinations of those 6 emotions. And what we learn is this is an appropriate emotional response to this situation. Now, the fascinating thing is that sometimes an emotional response is appropriate and sometimes it's not. It really depends on who you're with. So I'll give you an example. I was working with a woman who hadn't, well, she was 55 when she came to see me. And over the course of the session, what emerged, what she was very afraid of, and what emerged in her body or in her story was a little house in the middle of a forest that was all boarded up. And she was terrified of this little house, terrified. So I suggested that she take a hammer and just, you know, maybe pry a little edge off of one of the corners of the window and take a peek inside, and she could very easily close it if it was too scary. So she agreed to do this, and she pried the corner of this board off to peer into the window, and she went, whoa. I said, what's in there? Because I had no idea what was in this little hut in the middle of the forest. It was dark. And she said, it's my smile. It's my smile. My smile's bursting out through the window. And I said, wow, really? I have no idea. And at the end of the session, she sat up and we talked, we processed the session a little bit, and she told me that when she was 5 years old, somebody had repeatedly told her that she had an ugly smile. She had buck teeth and that she should hide her smile. So she hadn't smiled for 50 years. She hadn't smiled for 50 years. So when you don't smile, you don't know that it's okay to feel joy and happiness and express it. And when we smile, actually, the muscles in our cheeks send a message to the brain, and there's neurotransmitters that are released that your brain goes, wow, I feel happy, I feel great. It's a little upper, a natural upper for us. And so this woman blew me away, because what she taught me, what I learned from that session, was I never know what people emotionally are scared of and what they're not scared of. And what I do is I help them discover that and how to not be afraid of their emotions, whether it's joy and love or whether it's anger and sadness and fear.
I mean, wow. I mean, oh, okay, you're just, you know, creating a massive emotional response in my brain right now. Because, see, I think it's all about emotion and controlling emotions. My take on human beings is that they're generally dominated by negative emotions, and there's positive emotions, which I teach people to learn how to harness and express and utilize. But I'm also a rational thinker, and I'm very much into rational thought based on a science and logic and math, and almost like Spock and Data, where they save the Enterprise 97% of the time, only because of pure logic and math and science, not irrational thinking. So what are your thoughts as a human being when it relates to thinking more rationally or functioning more rationally, as opposed to being completely irrational and then allowing your so-called negative emotions to propagate inside of your head and then push you or drive you into or make you run away from things that absolutely need to be addressed? What do you think about that?
I think that's probably a pattern. I think that's probably a pattern where people believe on a very deep level that what they're doing is the best thing that they can do for themselves. So for you or I, it could be, oh, well, that's a negative thing. Well, why would that person do that? It doesn't make logical sense. It's not a rational choice or a rational action. But for them and their whole composition, it started somewhere, and this is where the chronic trauma response comes in a really interesting way, is that it starts in a way that the organism is surviving, and it will do whatever it can do to survive. And so when somebody, the classic example is somebody who is in an abusive relationship and they keep going back to it and keep going back to it. You go, why would somebody do that? It makes no sense. And yet for that person, somehow wired in there, it makes complete sense to them. And so what I do is I don't say, wow, you know, bad response. Oh, what do you think you're doing? It's more like, wow, this is really amazing. You're finding a way to survive and prosper in the world, and it's got you in the situation. How can that be expanded so that you've got some choice, so that you could choose to continue to do this, or you could choose to do something different, you know, and then people can have latitude. And, you know, I guess one of the things for me, too, is there's energy, and all emotion has energy, and I don't think of it anymore as positive and negative energy. It's simply energy, and it becomes so that somebody either holds something, and if they hold it so tight that it becomes a struggle, then within them it's negative. Out in the world, it's not necessarily.
Right on. What about measuring outcome? Like, for example, if your behavior is yielding a destructive outcome, and, you know, like, say, drug addiction or alcoholism, and everyone around that person can see that they're not moving in the right direction. Is it possible to think that behavior is not rational, that it's irrational? Because isn't the function of life to live? Isn't the driving force of everything alive designed to sustain itself? The purpose of life is to live, and then within that concept or principle or theme or purpose, if we do anything that takes away our life or that is destructive. And isn't this a common path in humanity? I mean, obviously these people that you're dealing with and treating, isn't it about the struggle that they've got going on with themselves?
Then that ends up being an interesting thing too, because what people will move in is they'll move in the direction of pleasure. So they will be in the struggle and continue to do what brings them pleasure until they get, oh, that's not pleasurable. That's a struggle, and it hurts, and either my body can't handle it anymore, my physical or my emotional body, or I'm making choices that, I mean, people who are addicts, they're addicts for really good reasons usually, and so they're escaping something, and so it's a way out, it's a way of relief, it's a way to survive, and it's a way to live. And telling that person, look, you know, this is a bad choice. You could do it differently. That could be the most scary thing in the world to them, unless they get on a really deep level, on a felt sense level, that there is a lot of pleasure in not making that choice and living their life differently.
Right on. I just watched Zeitgeist 3, Moving Forward. Have you seen any of those films by Peter Joseph?
No.
There are documentaries. They're quite exciting, but the most recent one, and they have a neurobiologist that they feature, and he's talking about genetic determinism and the nature-nurture argument.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the zeitgeist theme is that we are a product of our environment 100%, not 99%, but 100%, that every thought, every emotion, every action, all behavior is as a result of what has been seeded into us from not the outside environment, but initially in the womb. As soon as we are conceived and we begin to grow as a fetus, every sound affects us. And then we come out into the world, and then we are a product of our parents, our sociology, our the air that we breathe, everything. So what are your thoughts about the nature-nurture argument or the different positions that people have regarding one or the other?
Well, I think that's an interesting conversation. I think both definitely have a factor. I used to teach high school science, chemistry, and biology, and so I'm a logical thinker, and I think whatever genetics you're born with definitely lay down part of your structure. And from my own experience, definitely nurture has a huge impact, too. You know, we were talking about going to Burma and Scotland earlier in the conversation, and one of the things that amazed me as I grew up in Jasper, Alberta, up in the Rocky Mountains, and I've traveled and lived different places, and I only feel truly deep, deep, deep peace when I'm in Jasper, when I'm in the mountains. Like, oh, I'm home. This is great, and I love it. And I was absolutely dumbfounded when I landed in Rangoon in Burma, and I got off the plane, and that same feeling went right through me and stayed there the entire time I was in Burma. But this is incredible. It must have come from my mother's womb, you know, from me being in my mother's womb and my mother's emotional information about being in that country. I have the same sense when I'm in Scotland, but not as vivid as when I was in Burma. There's so much to the whole nature-nurture conversation. It's a fascinating one.
Isn't it? And I'm intrigued by it, and I'm excited to be alive simply because of the amount of information that's available to me, comparatively speaking, to going back in time like 50 years, 100 years, and 500 years, and even to the point where there was nothing printed. We've got this internet, we've got fantastic levels of communication, even you and I are speaking through technology, which most people don't even have any idea how it works. We just kind of use it.
Yeah.
I'm kind of convinced that the more science, the more logic, the more math, again, harnessing the positive emotions, because I know for myself that it's my negative emotions, if I allow them to dominate, that will pull me down into the sewer of my own soul. And I've been there, deep down there, and the only way I've crawled out of it is to develop a more rational view of life and to come to terms with reality. And we could talk about that forever, but I do want to get into the Rubenfeld synergy. Maybe you could tell us what that method is all about and some of its history.
I can tell you a bit, yeah, about the history. It's a good place to start. Alana Rubenfeld was studying at the Juilliard School of Music to become a conductor, which is key because what she learned to do there was listen with her ears for different musical instruments coming in and how they sounded and the pitches that they came in at. And so part of Rubenfeld synergy is learning. I listen with my hands and my whole body when I work with somebody. So it's listening to the emotions, the energy, the physical body, the talk, because there's talk involved when I'm working with somebody, and it's like an orchestra. It's like different things are louder and other things are softer, and it's ability to listen to all of those different parts as a whole. So that was her start. And through it, she actually developed a very sore shoulder. She couldn't move it. So one of her friends said to her, well, you need to go see an Alexander teacher. And Alexander teachers teach you posture, and where your head is in relation to the rest of your body really has a big impact on the whole skeletal structure. But the key thing is that the Alexander teacher would use touch to just invite the body to be in a slightly different position. And Alana would go and have a session, and after several sessions and developing some trust with this person, she found every time her shoulder was touched, she would have an emotional release. And she's like, oh, can I talk to you about what's happening inside me? And the Alexander teacher said, no, you know, really, I'm trained to do this technique, but you probably need to go see a talk therapist. So I know somebody who's really good. So Alana would hop in her car and drive over to the talk therapist and sit down and look at him and go, there's nothing wrong with me. I'm fine. I've got, you know, everything's good. But, you know, if you could just touch my shoulder, I might be able to access it. And he'd go, whoa, I don't touch people. I just talk to them. And so that was her first light bulb of, okay, there's some connection here where there's touch and talk that goes together to bring somebody to a deeper level of understanding or awareness in their body. And she went on to study under Moshe Feldenkrais. He actually developed a whole process of movement through awareness. And what his movement does is it basically re-educates the skeletal, muscular, and nervous system to find a fuller range of movement without pain. So she studied under him for 10 years, and then she went and met Fritz Perls, who was the founder of Gestalt Therapy, and ended up working with Fritz in a way where, because she was Feldenkrais practitioner and Alexander teacher, she did the hands-on work while Fritz did the talk part of the interaction. And what she noticed was with her hands-on, when Fritz was doing the talk, the person's words would not reflect what their body was saying. So there was an incongruence between what the body's message was and what the verbal message was. And that was the point where she went, okay, there's so much here. So what the training does is it's a four-year training, and I actually was fortunate enough to train directly under Alana Rubenfeld. Now she doesn't teach anymore, but other people do. And it was a four-year training and the most in-depth training I've ever had. It was fantastic. I've got two university degrees and they don't come close to it. And what we learned was how to work with, listen to the body physically and the emotions and the energy, and how to put the talk in so that there is a congruence, a match between what the body's experience is and what the mind is saying. Because when those two work together, it's amazing the relief almost that happens in the body and the mind. I never knew I could say no, let's say. You know, let's say the word no is trapped inside the person's body. Well, they articulate that during a session, and it's like even saying one simple word can free them up in their life to many situations where they think, oh, I got to say yes to this. Yes, I got to say yes to that. All of a sudden they go, oh, no, I'm not doing that, or no, I can't do that. Or the opposite could be true. You know, the yes could be trapped in their body so that a great opportunity comes up and they go, oh, I don't know how to say yes to that. So they don't, right? So it's an exploration where I'm just present with the person and listening to get clues of what's stuck and what's not and where the flow is and where the flow isn't, and how to bring things that are on a subconscious level to a conscious level, because once they're conscious, then a person has a choice. And Alana probably took about 20 years to develop this. And then she taught it for about 20. Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's amazing stuff. Now, how does someone who's interested in this and possibly teaching it themselves or participating, how do they get certified today?
You know, there's been a shift in the organization. And now, just recently, somebody can become a somatic synergist, which is just physical. That takes 1 year, and then there's a second year level and a third and a fourth. So somebody can start practicing after a year. And it's a combination of going to New York to study and also having webinars and having distance learning. They're trying to modernize it and make it more accessible to people in a number of different ways. But the way that somebody would find that out is to go to the website, which is www.rubenfeldsynergy.com.
Great. And regarding your own website, Gilly, workingwithwellness.ca, tell us about that and what people will find when they go to your site.
Well, I'm very excited, actually, because soon they will find a different website than what exists there now.
Does it ever end?
Does it ever end? I'm actually going to, right now, if you go to Working with Wellness, I've got the Rubenfeld Synergy and the private sessions I do in combination with the corporate work I do and the athletic work I do, and I'm going to split those. So one website will be Evolution Ergonomics, and that's when I go in and I do corporate work or I work with athletes, and I do that work on site. So I'll go to somebody's office and I'll work with them there. And then Working with Wellness will reflect the Rubenfeld Synergy practice and what I do in my office, which is in West Pender. So currently they're together, and within the next 2 weeks there'll be two separate sites, but they'll be linked if people are curious about the different aspects of what I do. Because what I do in the corporate world and with athletes is really an application of Rubenfeld Synergy. So instead of saying, well, we're just going to do this work in my office, I go and I focus on the physical more out there, but I also integrate awarenesses on the emotional and energetic and intellectual level out.
Which is so crucial.
Yeah, totally.
How does the athlete embark with you as your client or student? What is their expectation? Like, what is it that you can attract them to see you with this type of therapy? Like, the athlete's into performing and running faster, jumping higher, you know, getting stronger in the gym, and maybe they've got injuries, but what's holding them back? What have you found? Do you have any good examples of your own experience?
What I could say about working with athletes is a number of different things could bring people to me, either chronic pain and they're not able to participate in their sport because they're not able to do it, or a desire to perform better. Because what I believe happens is that an emotional memory gets held in the body, and it takes energy to hold that. So not only do you have the potential energy of that emotion held, but you also have the energy that's required to hold it. So you've got two times the amount of energy available if you tap into it. And so when I help people tap into it, what they've discovered is they run faster, they can hit a golf ball further and more accurately, they can bike faster, they can tap into their emotional energy in different ways than they ever have before. And actually, I think my biggest success story, or my most famous one, was I worked with a professional baseball player who was laid up for a couple of months and unable to play. And he just came and saw me for one session. It was amazing. And he had upper back pain, severe, and it completely transformed in one session. And the emotional glitch for him was a conflict between himself, his parents, and his coach. During the session, that triangle, which, you know, you think of the edges of the triangle can really dig in and be painful, they transformed to a circle so that there was a flow between the three. And that was it. That was all that was needed. Once he got that on a body level, he was able to integrate it in his life and then in his game and never looked back. So
you're taking something complex that people just can't seem to figure out. And it seems like it's a simple process, and yet so simple that sometimes, like E equals MC squared, it was always there. The explanation was always there. But it took generations of thinking and great thinkers to actually put Einstein in a place where he could build upon all of that, and then he finally kind of saw it one day, almost like, you know, Newton with the apple falling on his head. They kind of get stuff. Is that what you find people do? They just kind of get it like a light turns on, like Tony Robbins says, you don't need to see a psychiatrist for 18 years. You can just kind of like see the light now with a technology, with a concept or theme, and then you draw this stuff out, and it makes such significant changes in people. It sounds like you're dealing with the very roots of the problems themselves.
That's exactly it. The very roots, and it very simple. Very simple.
Well, I just listened to Stephen Hawking's latest book, The Grand Design, and he mentioned two words which I loved. He says that everything is about simplicity and elegance.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking for a formula that will explain everything, and he says that it exists. So that's very exciting to me because I like to understand myself and the world that I live in, as I'm sure you do. And that lack of understanding sometimes, I think, leads to anxiety, the not knowing part, or also not being comfortable in your not knowing.
Mm-hmm.
What a fabulous experience this has been. Our time is gone. And thank you so much for being my guest.
Well, thank you very much. I really enjoyed it too, Corey.
There's so much that you have to offer. Everyone out there, please go to Gilly's site, workingwithwellness.ca, and give some thought and energy and time to this Rubenfelt idea, you know, to fix our emotions. How important is that? Gilly, do you have any final parting comment that you'd like to make or share with our members and students worldwide?
Well, something from Alana, actually. It's the beginner's mind. It's letting go of knowing and just allowing the discovery to happen.
Gilly Thomas is a seasoned teacher, world traveler, mother, writer. She's done a lot and experienced a lot and is a wonderful individual who is willing to give from, it sounds like, her very soul to help people move forward. She is well educated in psychology and nursing, and what better individual to have on your team and on your side. Gilly, we thank you very much.
Thank you, Corey. Have a great day.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com or call us toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-866-433-1595. That's 1-866-433-1595. This is Scott Barrett, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Representing lifestyle. New way of life. Listen. It's SNU, sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight. Malik with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life, live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHawley.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.